Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their very own mouths. My guest today, former BYU linebacker, Ben Bywater. Hey, Ben, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
So is it still weird to hear the former BYU linebacker? Is that sunk in yet, or is that going to still take some time?
No, it's definitely sunk in. So definitely hard to hear. Obviously, it's so fun being a player, but yeah, it ends for everybody at some point.
One of the cool things is for people that have been tuning in to BYU Sports Nation and some of the shows that are adjacent to that, they've been able to see you doing some reporter work.
Yeah.
Have you enjoyed that?
I have enjoyed that. I've loved it, actually. It's been good, right? Because football ended just on sad terms. So like being right. Being around everybody. And like what I love about BYU and playing BYU football is like it's not just the players. Like it's a whole production involved, and like they're all good people. Like everyone on that BYU Sports Nation team is so cool. So love doing that. Love hanging with people, connecting with the fans. Like it's a dream come true. So it's been awesome.
I know I have told you this in previous interviews. I'm sure I'm not the only one that has told you this, but you're also very good at it. You are a really good person to interview because of your energy and how into, like, you paid attention. Like it was noticeable. You came across really good on camera. So is it something that you thought maybe you would have an opportunity to get into? How did that even come about?
I number one, appreciate you saying that. It means the world. I reached out to, I want to say, Brett Pine after football ended. I'm like, hey, any opportunities, just kind of like with broadcasting media, would love that. So yeah, I mean, like down the line or whenever an opportunity like presents itself, I would love to be on the panel and talking for, via Pat McAfee. I think that'd be awesome. That'd be a dream come true. And so, yeah, I mean, that would be awesome. Awesome. That's all I got to say.
Are you a guy that would feel comfortable doing more than just football?
I would need to do my research, do a little due diligence on that. But like just me and women's softball, I just don't know all the tips and tricks, but absolutely I need to educate myself. So would love to. So
do you think that is this something that you think you could pursue as a career moving forward?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. It's so funny because I'm in this point right now in my life where it's like, I am really trying to find out like what I, like I'm trying to find my linebacker of life, just if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Worked a job, just like, it just felt like I was playing receiver, I was like, it just wasn't me. And like, it was hard to be passionate about something that like you don't feel like is your thing. So I'm in this like cool little limbo right now. It's kind of probably sounds corny, but I'm just like trying to figure out, hey, what is my middle linebacker of life? Where can I go excel? What lane am I trying to race in? So if it is broadcasting, like, let's go full speed. So great question. I think I need to do some pondering and figure that out. But I think I would love that. I think I would enjoy that.
I think you would enjoy it. Yeah. I think you would be fantastic at it. What other things are out there? Do you have other opportunities that are presenting themselves or in other mediums or certainly in other occupations? I mean, like, what are you even contemplating right now?
Yeah. So, I did finance at BYU. And it's funny because like, so my, just for context, like my pops is a just baller when it comes to business, right? Like Harvard Business School grad, went to Bain, which is Mitt Romney's company, right? Kind of raised the ranks there and then became like a Fortune 500 CEO, like was just a true CEO for a Blackstone owned company. And so growing up, like he's been such an example to me. And so I've always had that, like, just like that's the epitome of like, success. And he worked his tail off too, which was like so cool. So I'm like, now that I'm like, life is real for me. I'm like, I'm out of college, out of playing football. I'm like, okay, like what? Like, I don't know if that's totally me, right? Like, I think I'm a little bit more eccentric, a little bit more free spirit. But I do think I have obviously those qualities, right? So it's like, how can that's a great question. I think what opportunities are there? There's a lot, BYU football and BYU finance has been, there's 1,000 doors that are open,
sure,
right? What I'm trying to do is get really specific on like, okay, what do I want, right? Like, where am I going to be happy? Where am I going to excel? And where am I going to go get my 10 tackles in, you know, every game day? So it's like, you know, you can go do a thousand doors can open just because of, you know, what BYU football has given me. So it's just like, for me, okay, where am I aligned? You know, I had a good talk with Mitch Matthews like a week or two ago. He's one of my mentors. So we had that talk. It's just like, go be aligned, right? Like, where can you be passionate? Where can you be aligned? Yeah. I'll get off my soapbox. But yeah, great question. I'm figuring that out.
You know, it's interesting, and you brought this up, and it's something that I know that Kalani has talked a lot about when it comes to recruiting. And when you talk with these players, and there's a lot of things that you cover, and it's certainly what your role is, and obviously now NIL plays a part in all of this. Mm-hmm. But he has talked a lot about, and the other coaches have talked about, the fact that if you come to BYU, you're immersed in everything that BYU has to offer, and that includes a lot of doors that could open up to you and channels into these different types of environments from an occupational standpoint. And you have all these businessmen or other athletes that you can sort of tap into for experience. And if you have questions and post-career stuff, that really is important, especially for someone like you at this time of your life, to be able to have a university that has so many alums in all of these different types of careers.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And like, that is kind of the magic of BYU. And that's, I feel like, one of their biggest selling points is like, not only is it a great program, great coaches, but off the field. And that was a big reason why I came to BYU, was just, you know, football aside, talk about just a university, a great atmosphere, good people, great network. So, you know, aside from Ivy League and Stanford, I think BYU is... And I mean, as far as academically, BYU might even be beating those schools.
What's been the hardest part about not playing football?
That's a great question. I think the hardest part about not playing football for me is just like, you go to those games, and when you're playing, you don't really realize the full like magnitude of like Lavelle, Cosmos doing a double backflip. You got fireworks, flyover, prayer. I'm like, this is crazy. And so I remember my first game in Lavelle as a fan, I was like, I don't know if I'll ever do anything as cool as like playing football in this, like, you know, because all these things were happening. I was like, this was so sweet. So I miss the boys, you know, and I miss, like, it's just funny. Like, that was just, it just feels like home. You know, every time I go back, I'm like dapping up all my linebackers. I'm like, oh, like, it just feels so good. Like, these, like, my boys, like, that's kind of, and you always, I always heard that from like the alumni. They're like, dude, I just miss the locker room. I miss the boys. I'm like, because I was kind of like, towards the end, I was like, just get my workout in. Then I was like, you know, like, I'd seen it all.
Sure.
I'm like ready to just go, like, relax, lay down. But it's just funny, you know, you get, life moves on. You're like, oh, I really do miss just like the grind with the boys, talking about like having to do prowlers or jumping in the cold tub. So yeah, that's for sure the biggest, hardest part.
Has it been, look, and I know that you're very happy for all of your teammates and all the success that they've had this year, but with this year playing out like it has, and, you know, being right there on the cusp of the college football playoff, was it hard to watch and not be a part of it, knowing the possibilities that were out there? Was that difficult? Even though knowing that you're so happy for your teammates?
Totally. No, so I get asked that question quite a bit. They're like, is it hard? Like, but like, really, like, because they're killing it. Like, is it even harder?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not only because I'm like not healthy, right? Like, if it was 2021, Ben, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm fresh, and like, you know, hungry to get out there. And like, that version of Ben Bye would have lined up with the 2020 version of BYU football. Like, oh, it'd be knock it out of the park. But yeah, I mean, just so happy for those guys. And like, I knew it, you know, I love like the camaraderie, what people don't talk about. Like, that was by far the closest team I'd been a part of. Right. And I was on the team until August 1st.
Yep.
So by far and away, just like, obviously you're gonna have competition. It's cutthroat. It's macho-y macho, me versus him. But like, the offensive boys would hang out with the defensive boys. It didn't matter. Like, the linebacker crew, I can speak about them. Like, I felt like it was fun. Like, we were always going boating and up to the ranch and like doing fun activities. And it was like, there was never, you know, it was very seamless, the love and the camaraderie. So I, and what the people, talk about it, but that matters.
Yeah.
It really does.
Well, and I think you're a perfect person to maybe answer this question because of what you just mentioned, that, you know, you were with this team right up until fall camp started.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everybody, we talked so much going into, and I say we, meaning the media, mm-hmm. we talked so much about what the preseason expectations were from the outside and the 4.2 or 4.5 wins and expectations being super low. And everybody at BYU is like, those are the outside expectations. Don't take it to mean that that's the way we feel in here. We know how good we can be.
Yeah.
So are you surprised by what this team's done? Because you saw this team in the offseason workouts. You saw what they were able to put together. And you talked about the closeness of this group. So did anything surprise you about this year? Or is this kind of what you thought this team could do?
Oh, no. I was totally surprised. I mean, like when we were like 9-0, I was like, what are we, 8-0?
9-0.
I was like, dude, this is crazy. But I say that like having been a part of the program for 5 seasons, like nobody really knows. Like I remember like you in July, like you can be so confident, and then like football is like the game of the unknown. Like you go out there and like anything, like for example, like what game was it when it hit Maury in the head or it hit Shmev in the head, the punt, you know?
Oh, it was Kansas,
right? Like that's like, we should have won that game. Yeah. But that happens. Like it's, you never know. So for the ball to keep rolling our way, and like obviously we're good, you got to be good at like hanging those games, but the point I'm trying to make is I was part of the team for 5 years, and I remember like my first year, like all the seniors were so confident, it's July, like we're gonna kill it this year, and I think we won like 5 games, and I was like, ugh. Like, but then 2020, it was like the expectations weren't as high and we killed it, right? Went 11-1, was like ranked 8th. So I do think, you know, for me, I guess the point I am trying to make is you never really know, but I did know we were going to be substantially better than last year. And then going 9-0 is like, that was so sweet.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, like we said, I mean, this is a team that that had even bigger things possible and obviously fell just a little bit short. But this team winning 10 regular season games and going to a bowl game, what an accomplishment. What an impressive year for this team, especially going into the year.
Yeah.
How everybody thought the year was going to go. It's just been such a blast to cover this team and be around it. It really has.
So cool. And like, what a story, right? Yeah. Like all makes for a better story. And like being an underdog, projected to be last, to, you know, barely missing the Big 12 championship. But man, I'm so proud of those guys. And honestly, Saturday night, it just looked like they're having so much fun.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, it's just football. Like the same sport you grew up when you were 8 years old. And so like, to have, and it's harder, right? As you get old, you always hear this, but like as you get older, right, policies get involved, NIL is involved, to like there's just so many different things. So it's like just to see those guys smiling and celebrating with each other, like you can tell it's like genuine happiness. Like when Talon Alfrey returned that kickoff, onside kickoff, like Ethan Slade was right there, just like so amped for him, you know? And I'm like, those are two guys that played a ton last year, you know what I'm saying? This year hasn't gone like their way, right? And like for whatever reason, I think they're both studs, great football players, but just like for those guys that be fully bought in and celebrating, working hard and like getting, taking advantage of the opportunity when they get it, like, oh, like the, dude, that made me, that was like my favorite part about Saturday night.
All right, Ben, it's time for the cliche portion of the questions here that we ask to all former players. Do you have a moment, do you have a play, a game from your career that stands out? Because you were one of those guys that made a lot of plays, and you were one of the leaders on defense. You. And so there's probably a lot to choose from, but is there anything that stands out to you?
Thank you. Yeah, I was a part of some really sweet wins. Like, I got lucky. Like, I was a part of some awesome, awesome games. I would say for me, early on, like, I don't know if people remember, I was number 33, like, my freshman year, and, like, I played a good amount. I always, like, braid my hair and stuff. It was fun. But I had a hit, like, one of my obviously, people, like, know my pick six in the SMU mm-hmm. game, but I had a hit. Like, I remember right before my freshman year, like, I just come off surgery, and I was, you know, I'm just in the pain cave in my mind. I'm like, okay, like, I need to go out there and ball, and right, and it was fun, right? That pushed me to get on this field and start. But yeah, versus Utah in Lavelle, their running back, I remember all year, like, because as a backer, right, you have fears, right? Like, game, you know, you don't want to get juked. Like, I would get run over all day before I got juked, right? I was like, I'll take it on the chin, get run over, hold on to the legs, live to die another day. What I didn't want is their running back catching it on a swing route and me like, you know, stopping my feet and getting juked. That was like my biggest fear all offseason. So we play Utah. It's like third quarter. Their running back runs a little swing route, catches the ball, and I'm in the open space. And like, lo and behold, all my prep like came and I made a perfect hit, like smacked him. Like, didn't get juked at all, hit him, picked him up, like, you know, send him back. So for me, that was like, just like, I, you know, reaped what I sowed. So that was like probably one of my favorite
moments. That moment, even though it's all split second, were you in the back of your mind, were you saying, don't let this greatest fear happen? Or was that not even in your thought process at the time?
Well, I think it does. Like, because when they catch in the space, you're like, oh, crap.
Oh,
like,
this is like, the scenario. Like,
here we go. So you just start running. But honestly, you've been coached, right? Like, the goal is you just want to take as much grass. Like, you just want to sprint as fast as you can so they don't have time to juke, right? So,
and it probably made the play even better for you.
Yes.
Because it was a fear of yours. Totally. And then, like you said, you put in the work, and when the play was there, you nailed it.
Totally. Totally. And it was just like you had manifested it, right? All those visualizations of me making the tackle in the open field, I'd gone over it a thousand times in my head. So when I did it, I was like, this stuff actually works, you know? Like, so yeah, that was one of the best moments for me. And obviously, big rivalry game,
sure,
Utah.
Of course.
So,
and snapping the streak.
Yeah, snapping the streak. Come on.
And now there's a little bit of a different streak going on. It's on the BYU side of things.
Makes me so happy. I mean, people know this, but I grew up in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, growing up, they had, like, what, an 11-game win streak, and that it was just so hard. Like, you know, and people are most obnoxious Utah fans when I grew up, so I would just hear about it all the time. So, makes me happy to kind of, you know, the tables have turned.
Well, it is a perfect segue because you were talking about where you grew up. We're going to get into a little bit more on that as we continue on with Ben Bywater here on the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Thanks again to everyone out there for listening to the Deep Blue Podcast. Make sure you leave us a rating and a review on the show. You should always check out other BYU Radio podcasts as well, like Big Stories. Cleon Wall dives into incredible and amazing tales from around the Big 12 and beyond, like Kansas offensive coordinator and former BYU coach Jeff Grimes. He and his wife Sherry decided early in their marriage that they wanted to adopt a child from another country. They detail their long journey to adopting Jada from Africa and how that girl changed their family dynamic. And then there is Wyoming women's rodeo coach J.C. Hupp, who lost her parents and niece in a terrible accident but continues to lead the cowgirls in the rodeo arena. There are so many more inspiring stories just like these two tales. So check out Big Stories on your favorite podcast platform and start listening today. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. So happy to have my guest, BYU linebacker Ben Bywater, is joining me in studio today. And Ben, before the break, you talked about how you grew up in Salt Lake City. You grew up in the Olympus area, right? That's where you grew up. So tell everybody where you grew up and what life was like for you growing up.
Yeah, Jason, it was fun growing up in Holiday. So I actually grew up playing Skyline football, right? So we kind of lived like I-215, where it kind of wraps before you go up to Parley's, which is Park City. We lived right off that, and it was awesome. I mean, Skyline, like those are my earliest memories of playing football. I was X-Men, so I played line.
Okay.
Yep, I played my first year. I played nose guard and center. Those were my first two positions.
Really?
Nose guard and center.
You didn't want to continue on with that as you got older?
I have so much respect for those boys because it's work. It's work. So shout out Connor Pay. Shout out my boy John Nelson, our current center and nose guard. But did that. Played a little bit of lacrosse growing up, wrestle a little bit, and then played basketball, obviously. And that was like my thing. It was funny because my dad didn't play high school football. And so like we were just trying to like figure, like we were just throwing paint at the wall for Ben, like see what stuck, right? Like I played guitar and like gymnastics and stuff. Like my mom was just signing me up for whatever.
Just to keep you busy, probably.
She was like, get this kid out of the house. That was the goal. So
how many siblings do you have?
One of five.
Okay, so, yeah. And where do you fall in line?
Yeah, then? So I got an older sister than me, and then two little sisters, and then my littlest brother.
Okay.
Is a junior in high school right now.
So were all of your siblings sort of in the same boat too, just like constant activities, or yeah. Was that just a you thing?
Yeah, I'm sure my mom wanted me out of the house the most, but like all my sisters are active, and everyone's kind of got their own cool strengths. So yeah, I mean, but surprisingly, like I always played ball, but like my mom was always getting me involved with scouts and like service, which my mom did a great job raising me, and you know, I'm blessed. So, but yeah, I mean, Skyline football growing up. Then when I was like 6th, 7th grade, we moved to the Olympus area.
Okay.
And so then I played Olympus from then on out, but I was still like playing guard and tackle. I played like pulling guard for a while, then I played tackle, but this was like all the way up until my freshman year.
Wow.
Yeah. So I played a line. What happened? The turning point for me was I wrestled. So my mom, like, I didn't want to wrestle at all. My mom was like, okay, like, I'll pay you to wrestle. So she'd pay me like 10 bucks an hour, right? And I would just go to wrestling.
Why was it so important that your mom wanted you to wrestle?
I think my mom had wisdom beyond her years, you know, because that was honestly probably the most, like, talk about confidence building and just like did something hard. I was so proud of myself when the wrestling season ended. I kind of lost like my baby fat. Right, kind of hit puberty and like just turned into a man after that. And like, I was like, like my confidence was sky high. That very next year, I played running back and had like 1,400 yards, you know, like it was like crazy for me. So, yeah, shout out my mom, you know, for just paying me hourly. I was a W-2 employee for my mother.
At a certain point, you made the decision that football maybe is where you're going to put that focus in.
Yeah.
What led to that decision? Was it something that was pretty easy to make?
So it's funny. So where I'm from, like Olympus, it's a great area. But in 2017 is when I graduated. Like the last guy to have a D1 scholarship was 1998. Like it wasn't a feeder school for like D1 athletes. D1 coaches weren't coming to my school, and if they were, they were just doing the rounds, right? They'd pull kids out of class and just like, hey, come to junior day. It wasn't like serious. So it was hard. I remember I was a freshman and I asked this senior class that they had a killer year, a bunch of ballers on the team. I'm like, guys, like, why is nobody going D1? You know, because I kind of wanted to play D1, but it's like that you're dreaming big and you're kind of scared. You're like, nobody's really done it. And so it was my sophomore year. I had a killer year. I just played special teams on varsity because at Olympus, like, they didn't really pull the young kids up to play varsity, right? Like, it was not a Corner Canyon, right? They're not right. Like, and so they just were like, hey, you know, you're a sophomore, you play sophomore, junior, the good juniors will play varsity. And then the seniors, you know, have it be a happy story, you know, have your parents involved. You played from you were 8 to your senior year, like, you know. You shake hands with football. And that was kind of just like Olympus, and that was how it worked. And so my sophomore year, I remember I got put on special teams, and I was like, this is awesome, right? Like, was I good at special teams? No, I got ran over a few times, but like I was playing and had a killer year on sophomore, but I was like 6'2.5" tall playing running back, and I was lean and long and striding and killing it. Like I, you know, my sophomore tape was good, whatever. I remember, and then Coach Tio Fanagwe, I don't know, he used to be the recruiting coordinator here at BYU, but before he was a recruiting coordinator, my dad met him somewhere. And my dad was like, hey, will you watch my boy's tape? And then he watched the tape, reached out to me. He's like, dude, I love your tape. Like, this is awesome. Like, I'm sending this out. Like, this is perfect. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, no one from my high school has ever gone D1 in 19 years. Two, like, I didn't ever even played varsity. Like, I barely played varsity. So all of a sudden, I get a call from the Hawaii coach. This Hawaii coach, I forget his name. I need to remember it. But I'm on the call. This Hawaii coach. I'm a sophomore, having never played varsity. He's like, the Hawaii coach is, hey, man, I want to offer you a scholarship. And I'm like, I did not think it was real. I'm like, cool, man. Like, thanks. Like, I appreciate it.
Like, are you punking me right now?
Yeah. And like, I didn't post it on social media, nothing. Like, I didn't post, like, my 247 sports, my recruiting pages, nobody posted it. Because I was like, this isn't real. And I didn't want to go to school and be like, yo, I got an offer. Because I knew the seniors would be like, dude, you're like,
yeah,
it just was weird. I, looking back, hindsight 2020, I wish I would have like posted it, and like that would have kickstarted my recruiting.
Sure.
But anyways, year later, played varsity. Yeah. And people know the story, right? Got hurt my junior year. Didn't play. I played 4 games, but enough to where the coach could see, okay, he's long, he's tall, he's physical, he can play. Right. And then, that year, Kalani brought me in. He's like, hey, I want to offer you. We need some more tape, you know? So I played rugby. We filmed my rugby season, sent it to Kalani. He offered me. And then, yeah, I ended with like a few D1 offers and some, yeah, a few, like I probably had like six or seven.
Who else offered you?
Yeah. So my first offer was Coach Wells at Utah State.
Okay.
And he is such a class act. Like he wrote me a letter this past year. Because he's at Kansas State right now.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he wrote me to say, hey, man, I've been following your career. So sad you had to medically retire. Like, dude, I was just like, dude,
that's cool.
Matt Wells, such a class act. So cool. Like, he has my ultimate respect. And, you know, I want nothing but success for him. So, like, that was so cool to me. And he offered me. It was sad, right, because he lost, right? Came down to Utah State and BYU. And I was like, hey, man, I've always wanted to go to BYU. And he was classy. But for a guy who lost me in the recruiting battle to then write me that letter, I was like, Matt Wells is the man. So, but yeah, Utah State, BYU, I had like Fresno State, Air Force, Cornell. I didn't even have any. I committed to BYU pretty early too. They got me on the sales tactic. this is what BYU did. I said, hey, Ben, we have one linebacker spot and we have two kids with linebacker offers. The other kid's going to commit if you don't. So I said, okay, I'm committing.
Putting the pressure on.
They put the pressure, and it worked.
It did work, yeah.
You know how it is, though. These recruits, like, you want to go play the game and post on your Twitter, which I get it.
Yeah.
So I wanted that, but I was like, I want BYU more, so I'm going to commit.
Okay, so you had mentioned previously that, you know, that you, BYU fan growing up, knowing where you grew up,
yeah,
that is not a BYU area. That is a heavy, heavy Ute area.
Totally.
Where you live. So how did you grow up a BYU fan then?
Yeah, so both my parents went to BYU.
Okay.
And that was just, yeah, that was it.
It's just the true way.
Just the true way. Both my parents went to BYU. So
Did you take heat for that, by the way, growing up where you did?
Yeah, I did. Honestly, I hate to say this, but it hit a point where we had lost like five in a row, and it just,
It was a miserable existence for a while, for over a decade.
Yeah, let's just say I wasn't wearing BYU like apparel to school. I was just like, I was a closet BYU fan, but glad the boys pulled through. And it was hard too. 2016, when Taysom, we missed the extra point.
Yep.
That's where I was like, I was a junior in high school, and I was like, oh, dang it, but it's okay.
You had talked about how this, you know, your high school, this was not a place where people made it from,
yeah,
and hadn't for a long, long time. So what did it mean to you and your family to have put in the work and earned those types of looks from D1 schools and then ultimately to be able to say that BYU wants you?
No, like it was honestly, it's like a fairy tale story looking back. Like I'm so blessed that even happened to me, and I'm lucky, right? I got parents that, you know, instilled hard work, and but like I got lucky, you know. I don't want to say lucky, but yeah, because I got injured. Nobody had ever gone to play D1 football from my high school. Guys had walked on for a little bit, but there wasn't like an alum from Olympus I could call and be like, hey, dude, you did it. Like, how'd you do it? You know, because no one had done that. And so for that to happen, we were just kind of navigating it. And times were different back then a little bit, right? Recruiting, you know, the portal was different. So there was 25 scholarships that would go out to high school kids. But my biggest thing was I'd go to these camps and like I just tried to make friends with everybody. It's funny. You go to these high school recruiting camps and it's all these, everyone's got this like mean mugging face. And I remember like Lavani DeMooney up at the U, like I just tried to be friends with him. He was so cool to me, and he was friends back, and he's like been one of my friends ever since. Same with Isaac Rex. Isaac was super cool to me, and so like we roomed freshman year. But man, it meant the world. Totally. I mean, it was such a fun ride. That's what was so fun about it. Like it was, my whole family was involved, and What a cool, unique opportunity. And I can't say that enough. You know, I'm just blessed. I'm just lucky. And you know, it was so, so sick. So it's awesome.
Was a mission for you always in the cards? Was that always going to happen?
Yeah. Mission was always in the cards. It's funny because, like I didn't have like a spiritual experience as far as like serving. It was just kind of like, hey, I'm going to go do that. Part of the plan. And, I think Tuyaki is funny because Coach Tuyaki came, pulled me out of my chemistry class and was like, hey, you going on a mission? And I just like said yes, like without even thinking about it. And so from that point on, I was like, I'm going on a mission. I told Tuyaki.
It was that quick.
Told Tuyaki I would. And so let's do it. You know, probably not the cool story, not what people want to hear, but I just said, yeah, I'm doing it, Tuyaki. Yes, sir, coach. And not even thinking, I'm like, yes, sir, coach. And then I was like, well, we're doing this.
And Guatemala, right?
Guatemala. But what's coolest thing I've ever done, for sure, was my mission.
Well, and you had said on, I think it's on Crew Wakely's podcast, that that you said it was incredibly difficult in the beginning. Is it, you said specifically that it was like getting punched over and over again by Mike Tyson. Like
totally.
Take me through, I mean, for those that have served a mission, yeah. understand what you're talking about, whether it's stateside or outside the country.
Uh-huh.
Talk to me about that experience and how that has shaped you to this day.
Yeah. I mean, you probably had something similar, right? Like you're 18, you hadn't gone through any, or, I mean, yeah. I know it was different back for you. I mean, yeah. 19, but you're young. You haven't really done anything hard. Like my life has been so posh. Like, I think it's hard. A girl broke up with me when I was like 15. I'm like, I'm so tough. But I get out there and it's just, I mean, for Guatemala, like for people that have been, like, it's not the most like, it ain't Cancun, you know? It's
right.
Not, yeah. So I get out there and I'm just like, I got to be out here for 2 years. Like, I got to find a way. I got to find a way to do this. And just hard, right? Like, you're isolated. That's what you don't realize is like, time kind of just moves in a different realm out there. You're isolated. I'm learning a new language. And like, my first area too, there was no, like, people think Guatemala, they're like, oh, you're just baptizing everybody. It's just, that wasn't the case. Maybe in, you know, 1975 you were, but my first area, like we barely baptized. I mean, I'm on my soapbox. People go to Europe and don't have a baptism their whole year, but we had one baptism in my first 7 months. Right. And I was expecting to have, you know, 10,
like every
yeah,
weekend.
10 a week. I'm like, hey, don't empty the font, guys. We're going to be back here next week. That was like my plan. So I get out there and it was just, we're walking 8 miles a day. I can't learn the language. I don't understand anybody. I'm like, in my mind, I'm just dealing with anxiety. I've never had anxiety before. And I'm like, you had heard about anxiety and people yeah. coming home for that. And I was like, oh, like, no, I didn't believe in it. I'm like, oh, it's
real.
It's real.
It is so real.
So real. And so like that was, and I'm grateful for it. Cause that's when I realized like I have OCD and anxiety. Like I do, you know, like and when something's really important to me, that's when it heightens. And so I'm grateful for my mission because it really like kind of helped me figure out, hey, these, you know, these are my things. Like everyone has something, like that's my thing. And so, it's been so good, right? Like as stressful situations in my life have come since, like I've been able to navigate it and be like, okay, hey, this is just, you know, it's just my intrusive thoughts talking or whatever. So, but yeah, I mean, it was like getting hit by a semi-truck going 75 miles an hour. it was so good for me though, because I needed it, learned how to be resilient, learned how to bounce back, learned how to have hard conversations. And really just my confidence after those 2 years was sky high, just as far as like, I can do anything in this world. And what a cool thing for me to just go out, and you're 18, you're trying to figure out, you know, you're living selflessly for obviously Jesus Christ. So what a cool thing. And I'm so grateful I did it.
Continuing on with that line of thought there, how much of the difficulties that you went through and learning to navigate those difficulties, how much did that help you down the road when, you know, in 2023,
yeah.
you get injured at Kansas, and then ultimately it sort of sets off this chain reaction that ultimately you have to leave the game of football. I mean, have you reflected back on some of those times that's kind of helped you today?
Yeah, I have. Like my mission really gave me that like confidence that I can go do anything. Like I can push through hard times. And like truthfully, nothing in my life has been as hard as my mission. Like that was by far the hardest thing I've done, which is like so many people do it, right? I'm like, I don't know why some people have, I feel like it's easy for them. But for me, for some reason, having to deal with authority, having to obey a certain set of rules, like if you know me, that's just not the most, like I like to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm, you know, in the right way. But yeah, like you bring up a great point, Jason. It's like, I feel like I've been so blessed and had so many cool things in my life, but I've also like had some pretty hard things happen. You know, I've like had some things knock on my way, football abruptly ending. But like, you know, I think I said this when I talked, like you can cry because it's over and like you think, woe is me. Like, I'm like, that was sweet. You know, that was awesome. Like it was going to come to an end at some point. Obviously I wanted to take my shot at the NFL and like figure that out. And so, you know, or just at least like have an opportunity, say I did it, say I made it. And that didn't happen, but that's all right. So you're so right. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah.
But like, and it's hard though. You can't really prepare for those trials. You know, you really can't. It's like, you think you're all tough.
Yeah.
You think, well, I mean, like you try and go callous the mind, right?
Right.
Run 5 miles or go lift hard. And I those do prepare you. But even when you are back against the wall, lowest of lows, like it's hard no matter what, no matter how hard, how much you are prepped.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. 100%. You know, and it's so with my football duties on the radio for road games, most of the time I'm back here, actually in this very studio, doing pregame, halftime, postgame.
Cool.
But it just so happens that the Kansas game, because that was our first Big 12 game, I'm like, I'm not missing this. So I was out in Lawrence in the press box for that game. So I was at the stadium in that game when you got hurt. It looked real serious when it happened. How serious did you know it was at the time?
So it's funny. So what happened was the week before we played Arkansas, KJ Jefferson, I went on, like, I blitzed the quarterback. I don't know if people, like, I blitzed the quarterback and I slipped off a tackle when I should, like, I had him wrapped up for a sack. He's a big boy. I should have sacked him, whatever. But I slipped off of him and my elbow hit the ground and I felt my shoulder sublex. Like I felt it come out of pocket.
Yeah.
But it's hard. So when your shoulder subluxes and it, like, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but when it comes out, like, usually there's like a stinger sensation, right? It's like, it's nervy and it's like, and I didn't have that. I just felt it slip. So I'm like, okay, like I'm, you know, I torn like, my left one twice. Yeah. I'm like scared. So, and you know, I'm trying to go to the NFL at this point. I have an agent. I'm like talking to teams every week. Like they're like, hey, I'm on track, like to be, you know, what my projected pick or where I was going to go or, you know, I'm just hearing good feedback is what I'll say. Like, I'm like, everyone's giving me good feedback. I'm on track. Just stay healthy. So that happens versus Arkansas. And I'm like, oh, so I don't want it on my record. And I know if I go into BYU, if I go into the training room and put it, they're going to put it on my record. And then I'm going to have to explain to NFL teams, like, hey, he has another shoulder injury. So I'm like, I'm there going to family, friends in Salt Lake that are chiropractors and doctors. I'm like having them look at me. So it's off the record. And I bought this sling and I'm keeping it really hush about my shoulder. But you know, the coaches, Jay knew something was up. But it really happened then. Right.
And really?
Then, yeah, that was kind of when that's when I would say the dam started to break.
So the damage was done going into the game against the Jayhawks then.
Yeah. Well, cause you see it, I'm wearing a right. black brace in that game. Yeah. So it happened then. And then I took some big hits throughout the game that I was like, oof, like that's a big hit. And then the hit, when it happened, it was not like a massive hit. Like it's like he's running and I have my arm out like this and he hits it. But I think that was just like the last, you know, straw.
Well, and I think we were all reacting to watching you after the fact, seeing how, you know, it was obvious that you had just gotten hurt.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where we all reacted, because anytime somebody has a shoulder injury, anything like that, you know, you have that arm that just kind of hangs there.
Yeah.
And so I think what everybody reacted to. It's interesting to know that most of the damage was done and it was just continuing to get hit and it finally just gave out.
I know. No, as soon as I ran over the sideline, I'm just in tears because I knew it was just gone. You know, I'm just like bawling, crying. So it's tough. It's tough. It's hard.
What do you do next in a situation like that? Is it immediately, all right, rehab, get ready and let's get back and get healthy. Is that the mentality of it?
I mean, I was in a tricky spot just because I had so many, like I had my future to navigate right then and there. Yeah. And I had, like, it was weird. Like it was weird when I was in that medical tent and I'm just like crying. I'm just like on all fours. Like I had this, I don't know if it was like euphoric, but I just had this like, not vision, but just like this feeling of like, it's over. You know, it was weird. Like, I don't even know. And at that point, I didn't know how bad it was. I didn't know, like, I had nerve damage. I didn't know, like, I was going to be hanging it up. So, like, that happened. And I remember I was sad. Like, that's kind of when, like, it hit me. It was just like, this could be it. That could be it, right? Like, it could be over. So, that happened. And, like, lo and behold, that really was it. And I'm like, you know, maybe, like, I don't know exactly what that means. You know, I don't know, like, what God was trying to teach me right there. I think with time and experience and maturity, I will. But a really cool little spiritual experience in that tent just is like, I wasn't expecting it. You know, it was like, it was kind of visionary. It was cool. It's cool for me. So yeah, I mean, as far as that, like, obviously you're hugging family, just like spending time with the loved ones. But I was, my shin splints were so bad at the time that like I had already kind of like taken all my Advil and my Tylenol to like numb the pain there, that when I hurt my shoulder, they couldn't give me any more. Like,
you already had so much in your system already.
Yeah. So like the doctors wouldn't give me any more. And I was like in extreme pain on this flight home. Like I could not sit in the seat. I'm like pacing back and forth. I had to go sit where like the flight attendants sit, and just, I was like, hey, give me a bag of ice. You know, I was like, but I remember I was in so much pain. My parents drove down to Provo and took care of me. But yeah, it was weird. As soon as that happened, it was, you know, I couldn't move it for the next few days because I had torn my left one twice. And I kind of, you know, I played through my labrum my 2022 year. So I was like, okay, like I'm going to play after the TCU game. But, you know, thank heavens I went and got a few surgeons to give me their opinions. And I had Neil Elitrosh. I don't know if you know who that is, but he's the surgeon in LA. He did Cam Rising's knee. He did Aaron Rodgers' Achilles. When I was there, he was doing Anthony Richardson. I probably shouldn't be airing that out, but anyways, the best of the best. He does. So he looked at my shoulder. I couldn't move it. Like I literally could not move it in the chicken wing. You know, I still really can't, honestly.
Still to this day.
Yeah. Like if I'm trying to pull my elbow to my ear like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Will that ever get better?
I don't think so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. So that was the hardest part is like, he was like, what are you doing? Go, like, you're not playing. He's like, he's the Rams team doctor. He's like, you were on my team, you would not be playing. So that's when I realized, I was like, oh, like the season's over. And then I had to navigate because I was like really trying to gun for the NFL. Sure. Right. And so I was like, okay, it's October. It's a 6-month recovery. Okay. If I get surgery now, I'll be good to go. Run my 40. Good to go. Right. They wouldn't operate on me because of nerve damage. Right. And so like, they don't want to be liable if anything goes wrong, and nerves are so tricky. They're like, we're not going to operate on you. So they delayed my surgery.
So it's messing up the timeline.
It's messing up my timeline. And so I was back and forth to California like every week, you know, just sitting, like flying to LAX, take public transport to his office and just like sit there. So it was just like the longest 3 months of just, you're just in limbo. And yeah, it just ended up, and right, I got the surgery in November. I was like, okay, cool. Got the surgery. I'm going to come back for my senior. Like I'm gonna come back.
Yep.
Right. I had another year of eligibility and it was so awesome. Right. BYU Nation made me feel so special. I'm like, she's sweet. But I was like, hey, this shoulder's going to be a lot of work to come back. And then, went back to my surgery. So late November, get my surgery. Okay. I have my sling off by January 1st. I go back to Elitrosh in mid January. And I'm like, dude, my shoulder's like not getting better. Cause I've done two. And I'm like, I know like the timeline, like this is like so far behind my other two shoulders. Like what's going on? He's like, oh, you like, this is deeper than we think. Connect me with a guy named Dr. Stevanovic from Slovenia, doesn't speak any English, at USC. I go to USC. He's like, yeah, we're going to operate on this. We book a surgery on like a week later. So like February 8th, go in, they slice the back of my shoulder open, pull my nerve out. They stimulate it, try to get it to wake up, and it's not waking. Like I wake up from surgery. He looks at me. He's like, if this doesn't wake up by July, it never will. So I'm like, oh my goodness. Like I'm stressed, right? Cause I'm like, okay, I'm coming back for my senior year. Fortunately they blessed me with some like NIL money, and I'm like, okay, I got to perform. I got to go be a leader on this team. And so I'm just like weight of the world's on my shoulders. So then the Tribune put out some article about me, you know, going to sketchy Mexico, which I disagree about. It was honestly such a great experience. I went down to Mexico. A lot of my NFL buddies connected me to do a little stem cell to help my shoulder. State-of-the-art facility, better than 80-90% of any place I've been in the USA. And I'm meeting my friends from Utah down there. I'm like, gonna see you. I'm like, oh, I know you, you know, really wealthy people I know in Utah. I'm like, I know you. So I'm like, I'm at the right place. And it was honestly, they did a great job, fantastic job, took care of my shoulder. So I did the stem cell, did it all. But yeah, anyways, that happened in March. Not getting better. Just did not get better, which was sad. Which, I mean, it's getting, sorry, I'm lying. It's getting better, just not at the timeline to play college football, right? And so it's like when you have a light switch, right? And the cord's on the wall. It's like if you cut that cord, you flip that light switch, the light's not going to turn on, right? So that's kind of where I'm at with my brain on my shoulder. And then the nerve connecting those two, it's like it's damaged. And so my brain is not able to send those signals to my shoulder for like bro science, right? The hypertrophy, like there's so much atrophy in my arm that even when I do the hypertrophy, the mind muscle connection isn't that strong because of that nerve. So there's denervation in that shoulder. So it's like if you don't water a plant enough, the plant's going to die. You know, if you don't get enough connection with that shoulder, that muscle starts to die. And so that's where the atrophy comes in, right? Like, so it's getting better though, little by little. Feels much better today than it did 6 months ago. And hopefully 6 months from today, I'll be in great shape. But yeah, it's kind of crazy. I can't lift it up like that in a chicken wing.
Wow.
So it's hard, but good. I mean, one door closes, another opens them. I'm just a malleable, you know, feather in the wind. We'll figure it out.
Look, I mean, I love the attitude. And we're going to end on this high note here.
Cool.
Because we've talked about a lot of things that, you know, that have been trials.
Yeah.
But I know one of the things that you're looking forward to, you got engaged a couple months ago in September, correct?
Yes, sir.
So tell me about your fiance.
Yeah.
How did you meet? What's her name? Let's get the details.
Yeah.
Here.
No, I'm stoked. She's honestly such a highlight of my life. So Kate is her name. Kate Hartzell. Her name is Caitlin. We call her Kate. So just a great girl. Just honestly takes such good care of me. I'm so blessed. So we dated a little bit 2 years ago. So yeah, we've definitely pulled the trigger fast here. It's kind of our third time around, but yeah, we've been doing the loop de loop, but honestly, like no girl better for me, like just so awesome. I could not be more stoked. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of just the next chapter and she's made it super easy, right? The transition. So man, I'm blessed. Can't complain.
Well, it's that positive attitude that's going to continue to make you successful in whatever you choose to do. Ben, this has been awesome. I always loved interviewing you. Even if it was a lot shorter than what we did today, I mean, I could tell that you were made for stuff like this. There is a career out there for you if this is something that you want to look into even more. So I certainly hope you will at least give it a look because this, you're very good at this.
Jason, means the world. Thank you so much. You've been nothing but supportive. I remember you were actually, I think one of my very first interviews.
Really?
In the second floor of the SAB. So you've been nothing but supportive. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thanks for doing this. It was great to talk to you. I know people that are listening to this, they'll be able to get something out of this. The resilience that you've shown and the attitude that you have through a lot of ups and downs in your football playing career. So thank you so much for coming in and doing this today. I really do appreciate it.
No, thank you.
All right. Thanks once again to my guest, Ben Bywater. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.